Hello and welcome to People on Purpose. I'm your host, Paul Kimmerling. People on Purpose highlights individuals who strive to live authentically by aligning their choices with what's most true and meaningful for them. Today's guest is Sue Harvey, and here's a little bit more about Sue. Sue Harvey is the founder and principal of New Direction Strategy, a boutique consultancy that helps organizations do change better. She is also the founder of Creating What's Next, a peer coaching program for women in career transition. Her work as a coach and change agent is informed by 20 years managing change in business, government, and nonprofits, including roles as chief of staff to the CEO for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts and deputy communications director for the minority leader of the U.S. House of Representatives. A Williams College graduate, Sue holds certificates in leadership coaching from Georgetown University's Institute for Transformational Leadership and in change management from ProSci. She is a recipient of the Wonder Woman Award from the Massachusetts Women's Political Caucus. Sue, it's awesome to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Paul. I am so glad to be here with you.
So we know that recognizing our sense of purpose can be a lifelong and iterative process. I'd like to start our conversation with your current sense of purpose, and then we can always do some historical tracing back. So to do that, my first question is, how would you describe your current sense of purpose?
Oh, I have to start by saying I love that question. I just love the invitation
cool.
about purpose and the recognition that it is always evolving. So at this moment, the way that I understand my purpose is to support what I call emergence. And what I mean by emergence is that process that we all go through from time to time of moving from the stuck, tight, uncomfortable place of something isn't working to the ease and flow of this is what's meant to be. And we know that emergence isn't easy. It takes courage. It takes awareness. And what I found is, as I've gotten clearer on my purpose about supporting emergence, I'm getting more opportunities to work with people and teams who are really committed to emerging.
I think emergence is what life's about. Like if we
yes.
don't emerge, yeah. then it doesn't go well, you know?
No, and we certainly miss a lot. We miss a lot if yeah. we don't emerge.
Yeah. You said so many great things in just those few sentences that I'd love to come back to some if that's okay with you.
Sure, please.
So in your work in helping people emerge, I'm curious what you find as some of the barriers to emergence.
Well, there's so many. There's so many. There's inertia. There's other people. The voices in our heads, which can
yeah.
be one of the biggest barriers, I think. I guess one of them, as I think about it, is what's the moment that forces the choice? That really lets you say, I'm doing this, the jump off the cliff moment. I think about a trapeze artist. And you can't, you know, if you're swinging on a trapeze and you're going to grab this next trapeze, you can't get to the next one until you let go of the first one.
Right.
But that is a scary, scary moment because once you've let go and before you've grabbed on, you are basically falling, right? There is a moment where you are not supported, where you are in transition and it's scary. And I
right.
think that's one of the hardest things is to commit to that moment of being suspended.
Right. Boy, agreed. I'm curious for you, how did this passion, you might say, about supporting emergence, how did that come to you as such a strong focus?
Well, it's been a journey, as you mentioned in the intro. And I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Certainly, mm-hmm. I've been a seeker my whole life, as I imagine I have that in common with you and probably our mm-hmm. many listeners. And so there's many deliberate things that I've done over time, the meditation, journaling, coaching, all those things. And then some trial and error, you get into a situation, it works or it doesn't, you learn from that. And then there's been these moments of divine intervention is the only phrase I can think of. And
sure.
I have two quickly that I have led to my current place in the world.
Yeah, please.
And the first one was I was, you know, so I worked for Blue Cross Massachusetts for 15 years. I was in many different roles. And things had changed. People moved around. I was in a place organizationally that wasn't a right fit, and there wasn't a clear next move, but there also wasn't a clear end. And I had been uncomfortable for quite a long time. And it was at the point, it was 2018, at the point where there were the Senate confirmation hearings for now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And as you may remember, the hearings featured Christine Blasey Ford, who was a woman who knew him in high school. And she was talking about her memories of a horrific incident for her from high school.
Yes.
And I remember watching her say what was clearly true to her. I don't want to get into the politics of it, but it was
clear. No, it's fine. It was clear for her, right?
Yes. And to an incredibly hostile audience. I mean, there was not a friendly face in that crowd. And she was clearly nervous, but she said what was true for her.
Right.
Nothing was going to stop her from saying what was true for her. And something shifted in me in that moment, watching how brave she could be on a much bigger stage and with a much more sensitive topic. And I had a one-on-one with my boss the next day, and I just said, I can't do this anymore. It's not working. It's not good for you. It's not good for me. We got to figure something out. And it just kind of all poured out of me.
Mm.
And, you know, 8 weeks later, I had a package. I was on my way to whatever came next for me. And I don't know if I hadn't seen her and had that switch. I don't know. It's not totally foreign to me that I could still be there in weird and uncomfortable and uncertain circumstances. So right. I'm forever grateful. Her courage really was contagious for me, and I think a lot of others that day.
That's such a remarkable, you know, recounting of your experience. And it for me, it highlights two things. The sense of discomfort you had about your current situation. So there was an awareness that things were not right in some way.
Yeah.
And then it seems to me that your witness of this testimony showed you it's possible.
Yes. Yes. I think that's really true. I think to see her say this really hard thing with no guaranteed outcome, and we all saw how it ended, right? I don't think she was heard and affirmed by any definition of those words.
Right.
So, but she stood up anyway. And the fact of that, I do think was really powerful to witness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it points to a larger point that I believe and I try to build into my work, which is that we need models of people who are living authentically, who are doing the brave, hard things.
Right.
And that I like to think we can then find each other, this community, people who are willing to do the brave, hard things, and we can gain strength from each other.
Right.
And in the moments where we don't feel strong, we can lean on someone else who does.
Right.
And on the moments where we do have a triumph, that can inspire someone else.
Yeah.
And that kind of communal building of momentum and building the muscle of being brave is a really powerful idea to me.
I agree. And, you know, what strikes me about this and brings me back to your image of the trapeze is that, you know, my guess is that for the people you coach individually or teams that you work with or organizations, what you're able to say and show them is, I actually made the jump from one to the other without falling.
Yes.
And I'm standing on the other side to say, you can do this too.
Yes. It's okay to let go of that trapeze. It doesn't feel that good in your hand.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is where you are right now, which is just such mm-hmm. a beautiful and amazing place, both, you know, informed by your own experience and then sort of motivated by this belief that others can learn how to do this too. But I'm curious, you know, you have a few decades, you know, leading up to this.
But who's counting, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a few, Sue.
Yes, a very small number. Yeah.
So if you were to look back historically to your sense of purpose, I'm curious how you might describe that journey over its arc.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing I would say is there are some things that have been constant when I look back forever, you know, to my mother tells the story of how she came to find me one time when I was, you know, six or whatever. And I had my teddy bear sitting in a circle and we were having a meeting. So.
Wow. I love that.
That really is in me from the beginning. There was no escaping it. So, and I think a couple of those pieces that have been constants for me, I've always had a desire to do some good.
Yeah.
I you know, how that has played out is different, but,
sure.
For, I don't know if you or others know the Enneagram, but I'm a two, it's a helper. It's just part of me. So, also language. I have always loved language. I love writing. I love learning other languages. It's such a powerful tool to me to delight, to inspire, to empower, to communicate clearly. And so that's been a real through line for me. And then the last thing, and maybe this goes to the teddy bears in their circle, is I'm fascinated by how people work. And I was thinking, you know, there's that book, How Things Work, and it's like how you build a building or how a truck gets all the dirt into the whatever. And I have that same fascination, but it's with all things people.
Got it.
People and systems and how do they fit together and what makes them tick. So those have been the constants, I think. And then how I apply all that is what has evolved. And I was remembering as I was preparing for this, when I was in high school, I went to Russia on an exchange. It was then the Soviet Union. On an exchange trip, and we lived in homes with families. We saw an extraordinary amount of poverty. It was as they were going through the process of democratizing and Gorbachev, and a fascinating time to be there, and so much need and such good people. And I came back inspired, and that was my college essay. And I, you know, went off to school so excited, and I promptly enrolled in Russian 101 to learn the language. And it was 8 a.m. 5 days a week.
Let me tell you. Oh, no.
That was the end. It turned out Russia was not my passion enough to get me up in the morning.
Like, don't sit down there, baby. That's it.
Right. That's exactly right. So, So there are some passions that have ebbed and flowed over time. And then I, you know, I say I'm on my third career. So the first one was politics. The second one was healthcare at Blue Cross. Politics was, I did really think of that as connected to my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much about change in politics. It's all about people. It's all about kind of systems and what levers can you pull to do more things for more people in the right way. Unintended consequences, of course, are a routine part of what happens, what we see in politics. So I loved all of that. And it's also Capitol Hill is such an exciting place to be as a young person.
Yeah.
So there was just the glamour may seem silly to some people for this, but it was, you know, there would be world leaders walking through and movie stars and everything we did was on the news that night, and everything was happening right this minute, and all the issues of the day, we were right in the middle of them.
Right.
So there was a real intoxication to that. And at the same time, and we talk about this, you know, letting go of one trap piece to go to another one, I started to feel not like myself. I think the intoxication and the showiness of it started to be more important than the substance and the policy and the, what we were really doing to help people. And it's funny to say this now because I'm talking about 20 years ago, but truth didn't matter as much. So,
yeah.
I mean, even then it was, you know, people were important. They could get away with things. And we all just kind of said things that weren't true because it was easier than saying the truth.
Wow.
And I found that that really, I couldn't continue to be in that environment.
Right.
And so I left. I just quit.
Yeah.
There's really no story. I just left and I went and I lived at a yoga center for a month. I lived with a family friend who had an art gallery in rural, like in the mountains in Colorado.
Oh, beautiful.
I just took a sabbatical. I kind of completely changed the channel and got back to what mattered to me and what was really important. So that was kind of one journey. And then, youthful dalliances and following a man across the country and all those things that one does in one's 20s happened. And
wait, no.
We don't have to, you know.
We don't have to go there. Okay. But boy,
right, yeah.
I suddenly, yeah. Okay.
There was a journey there too of personal.
Yeah. Maybe I'll do a different podcast. Yeah. Okay.
Right. That is for a different podcast.
Out of my minded. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, I ended up back in Boston through a series of circumstances. And what I would say about that is I kind of panicked and I went right back to what I knew.
Yeah.
And I got a job on a campaign. And as a result of the job on a camp, because of the nature of campaigns is they end. So the campaign ended through connections I'd made there. I ended up at Blue Cross and I stayed for 15 years.
Right.
And there was lots of great work I did there and lots of things that were valuable. I moved up, I made things better, all of that. But I don't know that I would say that a lot of it was really purpose driven.
Right.
It was really, I'm in an organization. I know this organization. I've built connections in a lot of places here. I'm doing good work. Let's just see what opportunity comes next.
Right.
And that worked till it didn't work.
Yeah.
That's how I would describe that. So I will say there were a couple really rewarding parts of it. I don't mean to downplay it.
Oh, of course.
And one of them was what I was asked to create a function. I combined two teams. I created a new function. I got to kind of set up all the roles and responsibilities, design how the team worked together. And that team was focused on how Blue Cross spoke to its members, meaning the cardholders, the people who go to the doctor and say, correct, I have Blue Cross. How do we speak to them in a way that they understand?
Yeah.
And so, which is not, I would say, a strength of health insurance companies generally. So that I loved. That I really, because that was using the communications, it was the team building, it was doing something new. That fed me in a lot of ways that I didn't know to articulate yet. But then that team was set up and ready to go, and then things moved on. So fast forward, Christine Blasey Ford, I opened my mouth, you know, okay, here I am. It's the new year. I am out of the company where I've been for 15 years. I worked for the federal government and I worked for Blue Cross, which insures 1 in 3 Americans. So
yeah.
I went from really big institution to another. I mean, Blue Cross of Mass is a franchise, but it's connected to this enormous institution.
Sure.
And I had to really think about why. Mm-hmm. Why had I been part of those enormous, enormous organizations? And a lot of it was safety for me.
Sure.
And what I saw was it wasn't, the safety wasn't worth the bargain.
Right.
In other words, to be safe, I had to make a lot of other sacrifices and choices.
Right.
And I also knew, and here goes back to the, you know, the switching trapezes or this idea of committing to emergence. A colleague there said to me, you know, you have the severance package, you have this time, you're never going to get an opportunity like this again.
Right.
To really think about what matters to you. And I thought about that so much in those early months. And so I took myself to Provincetown in the middle of January and did a retreat. It was spectacular. I mean, the sort of desolate beauty of an empty beach in the cold will prompt good thoughts like nothing else will, right?
So like, I gotta get back and have hot chocolate, right?
I'm so cold, I gotta figure something out, right? Exactly.
Right.
No, it was really spectacular. I'm actually going back next week. I'm gonna do a similar thing. I'm trying to make those annual, yeah. And so that time, and I just let myself start from scratch. And I didn't bring any old, you know, I didn't bring my Myers-Briggs. I didn't bring my old performance assessments. I didn't bring my notes from coaches I'd worked. I started from scratch. And that gave me the space to really see this idea. And the words are always evolving, but this idea of helping, it's almost like being a midwife,
yeah,
being a support along the journey of becoming.
Right.
And it's people and teams. It's really just in that there's something about that, the magic of that transitional space.
Yeah.
That's so, it's the scariest, but it's also where there's the most power and the most possibility. And it's where people need support. They don't need it any other time.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to push past that. But I think if you are willing to slow down and lean into that enough to really just nourish and embrace that, you get to a much, much stronger place in the end. And it's a really powerful journey.
Yeah, I would agree. Thank you so much for those wonderful illustrations. As I was making notes, I hope you don't mind, but I've pulled some things that you said you did that I just want to share again, because what I've heard you say is there were certain things that really helped you along the way. So for example, the importance of knowing yourself and your values, and that way you can know when your values feel compromised. And another was the act of paying attention to what you feel in a given situation, or what you're thinking, or to what your experience is as you move through a particular job or context or situation. So there's a fair amount of reflection and inquiry that you do to learn about your own state in any given context or situation. The third was the knowledge that fear creates the desire for safety, which is a perfectly biological response, right? We know from brain science that once, if we're strongly triggered into fear, we want protection.
Yes.
And how important it is then to know when we're afraid so that we can expand our choices rather than just, as your story illustrated, do the next thing that's safe, but may not be ultimately fulfilling.
Right.
And the fourth thing is...
Oh, my goodness.
well, you was like you opened a treasure chest. I was so thrilled. Right. The fourth thing I heard you talk about is what I would call the gift of time, which is an intentional decision to be a part. And that can happen over a retreat that you do for yourself, or just time during the course of the day where your focus really is this process of reflection and discernment. Yes. That it's like a gift you give to yourself. I think on the path of purpose, all of those things can be so key. Knowing who I am and what's important, paying attention to what's happening and how I'm reacting, understanding that I'm going to have a fear reaction, but that's not my only choice, and giving myself time seem so key to our own evolution and emergence. And I think you've highlighted those beautifully.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Well, and I guess fear and time, I just keep picturing a flower that's in a state, you know, a bud stage.
Right.
And I mean, what if the flower got scared? Yeah. Is it going to not unfurl into a flower? You would never want that. We wouldn't want to lose that, what's possible and what that flower can become. Right. And, you know, the flower doesn't have the gift and the curse of a brain, right? Which lets us do lots of things, but also tells us what's wrong with a lot of them. And so we have to work with our biology to live out our purpose.
Yeah. Well said. So as we get ready to close, I'm curious if there's anything you would share with folks around either their own emergence or their own particular exploration of purpose that you think might be helpful.
I think the first thing, I just have another visual. I find them, they're so helpful. I mean, to go back to the brain science, right? It just helps our brains to land on something familiar. And so I took my son, who's 9, skiing over the weekend. And we hadn't been for quite a long time. And so he wanted to start cautiously, which is fine. And we did some blue squares and we are slow and turning. And that was fine. We were having a fine time. Great. And then about halfway through the afternoon, he said, okay, I'm ready to try the black diamonds. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And that first run on the black diamond was like we were on a different mountain in a different country doing a different sport. It was exhilarating. It was scary.
Yeah.
It was faster. Right?
Yeah.
It was completely different. And I don't regret in any way. And I certainly wouldn't have pushed him to do that faster. I think we needed the warm-up time, so to speak.
Correct.
But what struck me in the context of the conversation you and I are having is just how you can be living, you can be skiing in a slow, steady, safe way. And it's like, oh, okay, this is fine. And you could do, people do that their whole lives. And certainly I have had times where I just like, I just got to do what's okay for right now. But there's also this whole other world out there.
Right.
That's possible and exhilarating and enlivening in a way that that staying safe isn't. So that is one thing is, you know, think about what's possible out there.
Right.
And then I think just a couple other things that I tend to ask people.
Yeah, please.
One is, what's at risk if you don't?
Mm.
And I'm not even going to say more about that. Just what's at risk if you don't?
Well, if I could say,
I love
that question because, you know, I think back to the brain science, we're often wired to project what we will lose.
Yes.
Based on what we know we already have. But I think that question also asks us to ask, what potential am I closing off if I don't do this?
Right. What might you gain?
What might I gain? Or
benefit?
Yeah, yes. Or what options do I shut off? Like, yes. If I never go this way, you know, it's I might lose an amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Please.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. So well, and then to build on that almost is, what responsibility do we have to live into our purpose?
Ooh, yeah.
Because we're not just cutting off ourselves from what's possible. We're cutting off the world from the gifts that we've been given.
Wow, Sue, so well said.
And that there's a meditation that I have my Creating What's Next participants do. And I'm happy to, there's a link on my website. I'm happy to, you can share that with folks. But that's one of the pieces that it talks about. And it's a real game changer because it changes the way we're thinking about it. It's not really just about us.
Right.
It's about, why are we here in the bigger picture?
Right.
So that's the second one. And then the third one is, people say, well, I don't know if it's the right time. And so my question is, well, what will the right time feel like? How are you going to know when it's really the right time? Because of course the answer is it's never, it's like, there's never a right time to have a child, right? They're going to turn your life upside down no matter what happens.
Right. In ways, right? You can't predict.
In ways you cannot, you can buy everything and read everything and build the nursery and paint the whatever. Doesn't matter. It is going to be chaos from hour one, but you know, it's going to be the best thing you ever did. So this question about, well, I'm not ready yet. Well, what's ready going to look like, really? And then, because after those really provocative questions, right, people are kind of glaring at me, like, why are you asking me these things? And then I think the counter to that is, how do you be gentle with yourself? Mm-hmm. And how do you get the support that you need to do this?
Right.
And that to me is the formula. To balance the challenge and the courage and the risk with the support and the gentleness.
Right. Because if I am going to let go of the first trapeze, what help will I need to help me believe that I'll make it to the next one?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that you just touched on something else that I think is so important. And I'm careful how I talk about it, but it's faith. Right? How do you believe that you're going to grab onto the next bar? And I think that's an essential element to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't, people can have faith in whatever they want. It can be organized religion. It can be your cat. It can be your friend group. It could be a tree. It doesn't matter. But I think it's very hard to do this kind of deep, growing, emerging work without some sense that there's a greater purpose,
right,
to which you are emerging. That's the impetus.
Yeah.
That's the forward motion,
right,
that's in all of us.
Right.
And so to trust that and let it guide us.
Beautiful.
I think is an essential part of this process.
Sue, this has been such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, I have enjoyed it immensely. So thank you.
I'm so glad. You're very welcome. So, Sue Harvey, thank you so much for talking with us today. For folks who are listening to the podcast, what would you say is the best way or ways for them to either learn more about you or you know, what it is you do?
Sure. A couple of things. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you just search Sue Harvey, I will pop up. And then also you can go to my website, which is newdirectionstrategy.com.
Terrific. So once again, Sue, thank you so much. And for those of you who have been listening, my name is Paul Kimmerling. This is People on Purpose. Thank you very much.